Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for joining me today on the Class War Battlefield podcast. Please do me the honor of supporting this work that I am doing. I've been doing this work now for free on your behalf for, my God, 11 years. 5, 10, 20, 50. If you can afford it, please do. Cash at me at $CWB Podcast. CWB Podcast. Cash App it. CWB Podcast. Also, hit me up on PayPal. CWB Podcast. All the way across the board, y'all. Help me out. Thank you for donating and enjoy the show.
Now, Jim, show this gentleman how you can dance and sing.
That's my attitude towards the Western powers. If you want to say there's no rules, fine. Don't go crying for your mummy when that comes.
America today finds herself in a unique situation. She's the only country in history in a position to become involved in a bloodless revolution.
If America does not respond creatively to the challenge to banish racism, some future historian will have to say that a great civilization died because it lacked the soul and commitment to make justice a reality for all men.
When a system doesn't work for the majority of the people, you gotta change the system.
Hello, ladies and gentlemen, this is your brother Brian Maritese. Welcome to this Class War Battlefield podcast episode. I want to use today as a means of recounting the 2016 election. I know why, right? Why go back there? You'll see in a moment. Over the last year and a half, a little bit more than that actually, since I kind of stopped publishing, I have periodically dipped back into the many, many episodes that I recorded back then. And while there were some bright spots, I was pleased with some of the episodes. I realized something that I hadn't realized before. A number of the episodes, while there were points that I was making, upon listening to them again, I sensed a level of confusion. I wasn't seeing something. I wasn't understanding something. I wasn't able to always deduce the poison in the environment around me. And I think tonight, I am recording this at night, it all came together for me. I'm not even sure. I think I told this story before. Something else, by the way, that I discovered when I started dipping back into episodes from back then, particularly 2017 and 2018, I realized I have dozens of unpublished episodes and unpublished segments that I never used. I probably would guess that together, between the two of them, I have 100 of them between those 2 years. Segments and episodes. With episodes being maybe 30% of that. But as I listened, you know, there were some times where the confusion was clearer than other times. And tonight, big shout out to the Professional Left podcast, a podcast that I think y'all would really like. I was listening to their third podcast. They don't publish the second one very often, Science Fiction University. But the No Fair Remembering Stuff podcast that they have. I know quite a name, right? But it is true. It is No Fair Remembering Stuff. And it's a really unique podcast that I wish more people would support, because the two of them who publish the Professional Left podcast, they're bloggers. And they've been blogging for almost 2 decades. Not only are they bloggers, though, they are researchers. They know how to research. And so they took the fact that they're bloggers, meaning they have a deep archive of knowledge, of real time, this is what's going on this date, at this time, archive. And the fact that they're really good at researching, and they put it together into this great podcast. The current No Fair Remembering podcast episode is on Harold Washington, the former mayor of Chicago, and how his ascension created a racial backlash to black power in Chicago. And I do still believe that there is deep racism surrounding Chicago, which is one of the reasons why it is in such a terrible state. I have watched in New York State how white people exert control over black regions that they cannot disperse. And they do it through the purse strings, obviously. But they also do it through kind of a back doorway where they make these black politicians believe that they are on the side of those black politicians, and then they prevent them from making real change. Now, I'm not saying all black politicians, you know, are upstanding or what have you, or righteous or what have you. No. But what I am saying is, the structure is the structure for a reason. Moreover, I remember his name sometimes, but I don't remember his name all the time. But when the conservative Democrat, I want to say it was Moynihan, but I don't think it was Moynihan, back in the 60s, talked about malign neglect when it came to black folks. Malign neglect. He was essentially saying, give them the illusion that they have the ability to make things better. Give them the illusion of it. Give them the illusion. But you prevent them every step of the way from making things better. Let them know that unless they play ball the way we want them to, they'll get nothing. A great example of that is in Buffalo with the fight, I think it was last year, 2022, over the mayorship. Everybody in Buffalo knew that the figurehead mayor, who is the mayor still currently, because he cheated, not like he stole the election, he just didn't follow the... You know, there are laws on the book, and then there's tradition, and he said, to hell with tradition, we can't have a socialist. And he said that because the white power structure around him told him to do that. And he's a puppet for it. So, you know, I don't hate the man. I have no animosity towards him. Nothing. But it's the case. I've lived in New York. I see it every day. I've seen it for years. And that's what happens. They did not want, including the guy who bought the Buffalo Bills, did not want a socialist in Buffalo at the mayoral level. Finding out all of the secrets, all of the dirty secrets, cutting off the slush funds, cutting off the backdoor deals, cutting off all of the money that's going to every place except for the black community. It took them years to get that TOPS that was shot up. It took them years to get TOPS in there. And look, I've shopped at TOPS. TOPS has a good selection. It's pretty big over here. But TOPS is considered a second-tier store. Again, I've shopped there. Canned goods are great. They offer a lot of meat selection that you can't find at the more ritzy places. And if you black, you kind of know what I'm talking about. There's some spots where you can go and you can get certain meats that you can't get at a lot of ritzy spots because white people don't be using that. Like ham hocks, smoked neck bone, smoked turkey, smoked turkey leg, you know? Man. That messed me up right there. I started thinking like, gotta go there and get some of that. But anyway, TOPS is kind of that, you know, they're a second tier store, you know? We have a spot up here called Wegmans. Wegmans is, you know, that's the suburban store. That's the white people's store. Now I go to Wegmans quite often, actually. I like Wegmans. They have great selection, but most of the stuff you find in Wegmans, specifically Wegmans brand, high quality, you're not finding that stuff at TOPS. Why did it take them years to get a TOPS in the middle of the hood? Why is it that there are food deserts in the middle of a lot of these black communities? Oh, it's because it's not safe. If y'all wanted it to be safe, it would be safe. I like the old school stories of cops, man, because they told the truth back in, you know, the early 1900s and late 1800s. They were like, yeah, cops are great, but man, are they crooked. They told the truth about it. And look, as I've said before, I've known some good cops. I knew one guy who I knew. I went to school with him, and he had a real good vision for becoming a cop. He wanted to become a cop to make things good for, you know, the community that he came from. He's a white dude, by the way. And I remember, you know, we used to walk, talk, stuff like that. And one day he was like, you know, I'm really thinking about giving this badge up. And whoa, what? Where'd that come from? He's like, man, you do not know. And he's like, I can't, and I would never tell you because of the stuff. But nah, man, it's not good. And I think he ended up leaving, if I remember correctly. He ended up leaving, you know, the force. And either way, let me get back to this story. You know, I went down that little rabbit hole. But it's an important one because most white people don't think about this. You know, we talk about systemic racism, but most people don't know what systemic racism is. Most people don't think about systemic racism. You know, most systemic racism, believe it or not, ain't on the books. Ain't on the books. Why is it that for the last 50, 60 years, dog whistling was used to kind of cover up overt racism? Because dog whistling isn't anything new. It's just the level of the dog whistle is new. If you went back 100 years ago, yes, you could say the word, and I'm going to say it, you could say the word nigger, 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 nigger. But what people forget is there was levels to the way that white people talked about black folks. So most white people are familiar with the idea of like, what is it? Oh, man, my father used to actually, it's like Jigaboo or something like that, right? The porch monkeys, things like, those are level, that's another level of talking about black folks. It's a little louder type of a whistle. Then when you got into scientific backgrounds, they couldn't use the word Jigaboo. They couldn't use the word porch monkeys. They couldn't use the word Zombo, which, by the way, another level of whistling. Another level. Boy, another level of whistling. No. They had to use the word Negro. Them Negroes. But see, you would think, well, wait a minute, but even black people call themselves Negroes. Yes, but it was how they said it. It was how they said it. Yes, well, we all know it kind of way that these Negroes be acting. Yes. They would use words like unintelligent, lazy, shiftless. There's the one that I can't even believe I'm forgetting. It'll come to me. They would use words like that. I was going to say prehistoric, but it isn't prehistoric, but it's along that line. They would use words like that to scientifically talk about the Negro. Craniology, remember, was a dog whistle used to describe black criminality. That's always funny to me. You can measure the cranium and discover the criminality of a person. It's crazy to me. Anyway. These are all levels of demonizing black folks, of demonizing Africans, of demonizing non-white, dark-skinned people. The reason it was so easily implemented into the new language of this culture in the last 60 years was because it was already there. It was already there. See, when white people got around certain black folks back 100 plus years ago, it wasn't polite to use certain words around them. And especially when you were talking about liberal racists. So liberal racists would use coded words. I mean, yeah, sure, they talk about jungle bunnies and things like that, and people would laugh and joke and yada, yada, yada. But they had other ways. They had other ways of talking about this stuff. And so because it had always been there, it became easily accessible and implementable over the last 60 years. Now, let's get to that fateful day back in 2016. So, I really think I might have mentioned this to you before. But if not, here it is. If I have, I apologize. So, I had already taken the Wednesday off after the election. I knew I would want time to do some research because I was recording the show. I might have started recording the show. I know I was planning on recording the show, and I was starting to look up articles and things, and I wanted to kind of get a head start on looking up articles. So I got home. I was working second shift at the time. I got home 11:30-ish. Oh, actually, let me back up. I need to back up because obviously, you know. So I had been talking with one of my coworkers, an older guy, older brother, actually, about what would happen if either candidate won. And he brought up the fact that he thought if the Democrats won, Hillary Clinton, that it might actually spell some real doom and gloom for the Republican Party. I mean, this would be three elections, presidential elections in a row that they lost. They would have to do some real hard searching of the soul. And I remember because he mainly stuck to that point. I had told him that I thought Donald Trump was going to win off of what another elder who had just passed away at the beginning of 2016, what she had said back in the autumn of 2015, that Donald Trump was using racism in a very skillful manner. And she said that in October of 2015, that he would win. She said that. She died January 2016, never got to see it occur. But she said he would win because of his racism. So, when I told him that, he first was like, get out of here. No way. The guy, by the way, was in his 60s. He said, no way. No way. And he knew. So to give you an idea of this, I've mentioned him before. This guy was no dummy. Former IT executive. Very, very worldly. He had actually met Hillary Clinton. He'd been at parties with senators and, you know, congressmen helping Fortune 500 companies secure money from the government. This dude knew his stuff. He had been in several of the richest hotels in the world doing business. You might ask, well, wait, how did he end up working with you then? Well, he got tired. And he retired, and he wasn't a golfer, and he retired to the small community that I now live in, and he started putting on weight, and he knew he had to get out the house, so he applied for an entry-level job at the company I was working at, and he was hired. He was trying to actually get up to the IT department, but they would not even look his way. And he suspected it, and I suspected it was because of his race. I told him it would probably happen. He didn't believe me with that either, and then it happened. Anyway, he didn't want to entertain the idea that Trump could win. As we got closer to the election, I started coming around to where he was at. I said, you know, maybe you're right. Maybe I'm reading this wrong. Maybe you're right. Maybe you're right. Blah, blah, blah. That night, I was on my phone tracking the incoming data. And I think by 9:15, I was like, I don't think Hillary's going to win. And I remember going to him. And he was very soft-spoken, very deliberate in how he talked. And I said, I don't think she's winning. And he looked at me suddenly. He goes, wait, what? And I go, she is not winning. And he goes, yeah, it's only 9:15. Give it some time. Give it some time. By 10 o'clock, it was pretty much over, if you remember. And I said to him, I go, I don't think she's winning. And the look on his face was blank, because that's who he was. But when we got on the bus that night, he was like, well, this is going to be real interesting. And I'm like, you in shock. And I'll get to what happened the next day, because that was something else. Not the next day, I'm sorry, but the Thursday, because I had Wednesday off. So the Thursday when I came back, which actually it surprised me. Ain't going to lie. So I get home, working second shift. It's 11 o'clock, 11:30, I mean. I go to sleep, get up early, 5 o'clock, go down to my favorite spot to have coffee. And a couple of people are there that I know, a couple of older guys who are chilling, drinking coffee, having fun. I'm talking with them. You know, they obviously asked me about Trump and everything. And I'm like, hey, look, he's the president of the United States. Hopefully he does well, because if he does well, the whole country does well, blah, blah, blah. And the one older guy, 92 years old, said, I don't give a damn about none of that. He's a fool. He's an idiot. I'm glad you look at it that way, but look at him that way, but I don't. He shouldn't win. And he didn't win the popular vote. He won the stupid Electoral College. And he goes, my blood pressure's up. Let me get out of here. He got up and left with the other guy who sat with him. So I think it was about 7 o'clock. I'm sitting there on my computer doing what I'm doing, looking up articles, stuff like that. When suddenly, behind me, I hear, not loud, but not soft, nigger. I kept typing. I've been called that word before. It don't hurt my feelings. I kept going. Whatever. About 20 minutes later, nigger. Like, okay. All right. So this is about to be what this is. About 40 minutes later. I don't even think it was 40 minutes later. Probably was about 25 minutes later. Anyway, nigger. Okay. Got done on my computer. You know, whatever. Left. When I got home, I realized I was shaking. Something had changed. That name usually don't bug me, but something had changed. Later on that day, I went down to one of the local stores. I won't say which one. Okay, technically it's not local. It's like 20 minutes from here. But driving time. So I'd been going there quite a bit. And they had a bakery there. And their bakery is awesome. And I had asked them, because at the time I was experiencing some issues with nuts. Ironically, it's cleared up. But I couldn't have walnuts, which, by the way, one of my favorite things to eat. Not cool. But I couldn't have walnuts. It was giving me hives. So they had chocolate chip cookies there, freshly baked. I asked them if they could, you know, just bake a batch without the nuts. No problem. I'd been going there since 2015. They were good with it. They were awesome with it, because As the lady there told me, we sell those anyway, and they sell out anyway. So, absolutely, that's not even a problem. The day before, I'm not joking, the day of the election, so it was technically the day of the election, I had gone there, grabbed me a couple for work. They had walnuts, they had non-walnuts. The day after, I went back there to grab me a couple more for the next day. They only had walnuts. So I looked at the lady, you know. I didn't think anything of it, to be honest with you. I just figured they hadn't put them out or they just ran out. So I said, hey, you plan on getting any of the non-walnut cookies? Because, you know, I'm always in. And she cut me off and said, what's there is there. Buy it or don't. Okay. They had also been nice, and there were multiple other cookies that had nuts in them, and they were putting those out also without nuts. Again, that stopped. I figured, okay, might be having a bad day. I literally thought this. She might be having a bad day. I'll come back. I did. A couple of days later, still no cookies without the walnuts. A couple days later, still no cookies without the walnuts. I'm going to just not even go through the number of days, but it was until a few months into, 2017 when some cookies without nuts started reappearing. And it only happened, because it was an in-store decision, because the walnut ones weren't selling as fast. I actually bought it up because I thought maybe, you know, they just couldn't get them or something. You know, like they didn't have time to make them or whatever. I bought it up to one of the women who were friendly, who I was friendly with there. And she said, you know, I don't know. Let me go and ask. And she went back, and I saw her when she was talking to the lady. And the lady looked out at me, squinted her eyes, said something, gestured in a manner which I was like, yeah, she ain't happy. The woman came back to me and said, she said, what's there is there. You can buy it or you know, you can buy it or you don't have to. And I was like, man, what the heck is going on? And even she was like, I have no clue. We've never had a problem doing it before. I don't get it. I knew what it was. The last thing I will tell you about is something that happened in, I believe it was January of 2017. I don't know if it was before or after Trump was inaugurated. I think it was after he was inaugurated, but don't quote me on that. And actually, what's funny is I was working with a guy who has completely rotted his brain thanks to Trump and the GOP and conservatives and stuff like that. It's quite amazing. But anyway, so I was walking down to one of the stores. Actually, I think I was walking to the restaurant, and then I went to the store anyway. And there was this, it was late, it was dark, it was snowy and icy, as it sometimes is up here. Not recently, though, but back then. I was walking, you know, and there was this group of young white men. They looked like they probably hit the gym a bit. And they were talking, they were hooting, they were hollering, and they were on the street. They were walking on a street that was ahead of me, but they were walking diagonally, so we were going to meet at the corner. I passed by them, say, hey guys, what's going on? How you doing? And one of them said, shut up, nigger. And I kind of looked back at him. And the one of the other ones said, what? What? You got something to say? And I laughed. And they were like, oh, what? What? What do you think is funny? And I said, y'all just looking for a fight. You know, don't know if y'all been drinking or not, but y'all just looking for a fight. Yeah, get out of here, nigger. Get out of here. Get out of here. What you gonna do, call Obama? Get out of here, nigger. Like, okay. All right. Like, yo, y'all have a good night. Y'all have a good night. Don't get shot. And, oh, who's gonna shoot us? Who's gonna shoot us? Kept moving. I experienced dozens of incidents like that in the weeks following Donald Trump being elected, and again when he was inaugurated. Something that has always amazed me is, you know, when my father told me years back that he was close, you know, he was close to being lynched, hung because of his color, and that if it hadn't been for the fact that he could run fast and he knew how to run, I think he was taught it by one of his uncles. You don't run in a straight line, boy, because that makes you an easy target for the bullet. You run diagonally and unpredictably. Learn these woods. Know them like the back of your hand. You can outsmart any man that tries to run you through them. I don't care if they got dogs or whatever. You learn it. And he did. And he did. He watched one of his friends get hung. Not like, oh, well, this is fun. No. Something occurred. I won't get into what. And a bunch of white men took this 14-year-old, I think. He was a teenager. He wasn't older teenager. He was young teenager, like 13 or 14. This 14-year-old boy, and put him up in a tree. And if it hadn't been for the fact, again, that my father could run quick and knew how to run, he would have been right up there with him. They tried chasing after him, but my father was too quick. They couldn't get him. But my father did use what he knew to turn around and see if there was something that he could do to save his friend. And he couldn't. When my father told me that story, I looked in his eyes, and you know what's crazy about it is? And this, I think, this is something that white people don't understand. And I've literally had white people ask me this. Or ask me about this. When I looked in my dad's eyes as he told me that story, you know what I didn't see? I didn't see a lick of hate. I didn't see a lick of hate. I've had white people ask me since I was in high school, why don't black people hate them? I don't understand it, one of my high school friends said. If it was me, I would hate them. That ain't in us. I have taken an approach of non-hate towards the white cretins who like to do the things like those people like to do. Today, black folks don't so much have to worry about a lot of people calling them niggers. They don't. It's the actions of white people that calls them niggers. Here's the thing. Donald Trump brought to the surface of this country its original character. And the reason why things haven't gone back to normal with Joe Biden in the White House is because white people know something. You can't stop black people, brown people, red people, yellow people from taking a majority stake of this country over. And they know it. So white people, a lot of them, have it in their minds to destroy this country. So if white people can't have it, black people will not have it either. They want to destroy it. Hell, if you don't believe me, push for privatization, the push for privatization of government, government at a federal level and often a state level, are usually the biggest employers of non-white people. Did you hear what I said? Usually, it is the federal government and the state governments which are the biggest employers of non-white people. The push to privatize public assets is a scheme designed to deprive the budding black and brown and non-white populations with the instruments and structures that government has created. A government, by the way, which has taken the tax money generated by the economic activity and commerce of black, brown, red, yellow people. But most specifically, I'm targeting black and brown people. And even more specifically, black people, because they've taken our money and they've given us less services in return. So the goal of privatization is to deprive black people from the instruments and structures of government that we have helped build. They want it in private hands so that we won't get it. And the private hands that they are putting it in are majority white, overwhelming majority white, and they are white adjacent. They are white adjacent. Y'all better wake up. They would much prefer to have the country ripped apart than to have black people, yellow people, red people, brown people get their just due. And if you want further proof of this, I bought up obviously privatization and deprivation, deprive. I want you to look up the word austerity in a dictionary. You might need to go a little bit deeper than just, you know, Webster's in the last 20, 30 years. You're going to find something interesting out about that word. I found it out years ago, too. When you look up the austerity concept, that word, I want you to keep in your mind the idea of dictator, the role of the dictator, especially when you think about it as it's evolved in the post-colonial world. I also want you to think of the idea of authoritarianism. The structure is being built to ensure that a minority population in this country can keep a stranglehold on all institutions. If you have any questions, comments, concerns, you know you can always reach out to me. I am your brother Vimer Dees. Until the next one, peace. There's a shadow on the faces of the men who sent the guns to the wars that are fought in places where their business interest runs. On the radio, talk shows, and the TV, you hear one thing again and again: how the USA stands for. And we come to the aid of a friend. But who are the ones that we call our friends? These governments killing their own, or the people who find they can't take anymore, and they pick up a gun or a brick or a